This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
En compensaciones por sus servicios desde el año 2000 y añadió, ¿eso le parece justo? Full dijo que tenían un comité de compensaciones encargado de asegurarse de que los intereses de los ejecutivos y los empleados iban de acuerdo con los de los accionistas. E indicó que ganó unos 300 millones de dólares durante esos años y que unos 60 fueron compensaciones en efectivo. Henry Waxman denunció que mientras el ejecutivo Fulch pedía al secretario del Tesoro Paulson un plan de rescate federal, la corporación bancaria Lehman Brothers continuó pagando a sus altos ejecutivos compensaciones millonarias. Y así llegamos al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a la Red de Prensa Alternativa del Suroccidente Colombiano y a los compañeros de la radio Bio Bio de Chile. A nombre de Rolando Solano y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
Do you long to be part of a strongly proactive queer group made up of members who respect one another?
Are you disgusted by the cowardly mainstream so-called leadership of the LGBTQI community?
Does the public abuse of queer persons and its widespread acceptance make you angry?
Are you willing to work with a group of gay superheroes that fights for real justice?
Come get fitted for your superhero cape at the Queer Justice League General Meeting on the first Thursday of every month at 8 p.m. at the LGBT Community Services Center at 208 West 13th Street at 7th Avenue. Or for more information, call 973-412-7743 or email us at queerjusticeleague@gmail.com. Again, that's 973-412-7743 or email us at queerjusticeleague@gmail.com.
Hey girl, why do you look so happy?
Honey, I'm 18 now, so you know I can't wait to register to vote. What's the matter? Why do you look so down?
Well, I made some mistakes a couple years back. I was convicted of a felony, so I can't vote anymore.
Girl, haven't you heard? As long as you're not on parole for a felony, you can still vote in the state of New York.
For real? Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go register.
Be a part of the Law and Policy Group's Sweet Justice campaign. All you have to do is to spread the word. Under the New York law, to register to vote, you must be a U.S. citizen, at least 18 years old, live in New York, not currently in prison or on parole for a felony. So if you want change, register to vote today.
That's Sweet Justice.
Yeah, you know how we do. We do it for the people and the struggle of the brothers and the folks. The lovers of the dope.
Recognizing a wrong being committed in this country's name, insisting that we deliver on the promise of our Constitution. These are the acts of patriots, men and women who are defending what is best in America. And we should never forget that, especially when we disagree with them. If
especially when they make us uncomfortable with their words.
You're listening to 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Not commercial, listener sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
And as the young ladies have mentioned before, this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, broadcasting throughout the tri-state area and streaming live at WBAI.org, listener-sponsored community radio since 1960. Peace and justice, or peace and just us? That's the question that I like to debate about. But anyway, I'm not going to go and open up calls on that because people will like saying, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Just trying to be interesting at this moment. Anyway, it is 12:06 a.m. Usually at this time, it is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, which will be coming on very shortly. But as we wait for Bill Weinberg to grace us with his presence, I would like to share with you with some music that will be in the mood of the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And once again, this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. 1:30 a.m. will be Weaponry. And then at 3:30 a.m. will be From the Soundboard, which will be hosted by no other than me, Reggie Johnson. And during that time, I will be showcasing some concerts of Miles Davis of the 1970s. So I hope that you will stay up and listen and enjoy of some of the cool music that I'll be offering to you, sharing with you during between the times of 3:30 a.m. to 6 a.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. So, as we wait for Mr. Weinberg to grace us with his presence, why don't we listen to some music here?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, welcome aboard. Belatedly to the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM. Big, big, big shout-out and gracias to my good bud Reggie Johnson for coming to my rescue tonight, having left at home the telephone number of our esteemed guest and having to race back up to NoHo and back on my bicycle. Fortunately, I came prepared with music. And that was Las Campesinas de Cajamarca, indigenous music from Peru. And the guest, who should be on the line with us, is from Peru, Francisco Soberón. Are you there?
Yes, of course. Thank you very much for inviting me to be with your audience.
Yes. I'm sorry to call you so late. I left the number at home and had to ride back home and get it, as you heard. But so you're actually in town. You're in Brooklyn tonight, right?
Exactly. Uh-huh. I have just arrived a few days ago here to New York, but I've been in D.C. A few days also, participating in a seminar organized by Washington office in Latin America and the George Mason University on the trial of two Fujimori being held in Peru and with other experiences of access to justice in Argentina, Uruguay, Chile.
Experiences of what did you say?
Access to justice. Access to justice.
Access to justice. Mm-hmm.
Yes, on cases of the past, not during human rights abuses in different countries of Latin America. And the challenge of this workshop was to show how much has been achieved in each country in these recent years, because there are things moving in Latin America, in these countries, in terms of finally giving to the victims of human rights abuses in those days the possibility of punishing with verdicts perpetrators of human rights abuses in these countries.
All right, so you work with a group called the Asociación Pro Derechos Humanos in Peru.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little, that's an independent, non-governmental organization.
Yes, of course. In the last 25 years, this year in September, we celebrate our 25 year of activity in Peru. We appear in the scenario of Peru in circumstances of political violence that started in Peru with the crimes committed by the Shining Path in Peru, and then the violations to human rights perpetrated by security forces of Peruvian state in the contra-subversive operations in different areas and regions of our country.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that there's some confusion in the popular mind about Peru to the extent that people up here in Gringolandia follow what's happening in Peru at all. You know, there's a sort of an understanding that Chile and Argentina went through years of very harsh dictatorship. But people tend to view Peru and the experience of Alberto Fujimori differently. And what? They sort of see that he was legitimately elected and he was the democratic president of Peru, and he had to take some unfortunate measures because of the Shining Path.
Yes. Of course, not only Fujimori, but the previous administrations of former President Alan Garcia in 85 to 90, and before Fernando de la Hunde Terry, 80-85, were democratic regimes, and human rights abuses, violations were systematically generalized in all over the country during formally democratic administrations in our country. And Fujimori also was president elected in 1990, but in 1992, we must remember, he do an auto coup, and he assumed the administration of the government with fully powers in a joint work with the militaries in a civic military administration from 1992 till the end of his administration, when he collapsed after the corruption events that people started to know in Peru, after the videos that Montesinos and different people in Peru from the administration, from the judiciary, from the Congress and from every organization of the state were filmed in these intelligence service offices receiving money, huge amounts of dollars for corruption that was perpetrated in Peru during this administration of Alberto Fujimori. So I think it's not well known what have been happening in Peru, particularly since 1992, when a dictatorship regime was established by the Aitokup of Alberto Fujimori.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you mentioned Vladimiro Montesinos. Mm-hmm. Who was, who was he? He was Fujimori.
He was his personal advisor, and then the advisor and the former ruler of the intelligence, National Intelligence Service in Peru, who was an institution who had control of everything in Peru during the administration of Alberto Fujimori. This intelligence service unit was involved in corruption, was involved in crimes of death squads like the Colina group, that is one of the elements of the accusation to Fujimori nowadays, in crimes against humanity, violations to human rights, in cases like La Cantuta, where nine students at a professor were disappeared. Afterwards, kill, burn their bodies. And,
that's La Cantuta University in Lima.
Yeah, La Cantuta University is a state university nearby Lima, where this occurred in July 1992 in Peru, and is one of the cases from whom Guy Fujimori is being taken to trial nowadays. And the other cases is Barrios Altos. Was also a crime of this death squad Colina, perpetrated in a house where they were living in different families, and they were in a party, and then the death squad entered and shot with machine guns, with silence in the, to all the families who were there. Children were killed, and different women and men also in this.
And if I'm not mistaken, it turned out that they had the wrong address, that they weren't even targeting the people who they thought they wanted to kill.
Yeah, well, there was presumably, indeed, inside this house, different apartments. And probably they were trying to search some members of the Shining Path, and they probably do this mistake, but nevertheless, people were killed, no?
But a lot of people who were presumably had no connection to the guerrillas whatsoever.
Well, yes, in both cases, they were not connected at all. There were, in the case of the La Cantuta, were students who were also, of course, in the in positions of being opposed to the presence once in La Cantuta of former President Fujimori, because of its policies, and they were against it. But well, for these activities, they shouldn't be killed as they were, and with participation also of the military barrack who was established several months before in the surroundings of the University of La Cantuta. So it's a clear crime committed by this death squad.
Mm-hmm. And in the Barrios Altos case, I believe the people who were targeted, they were ice cream vendors, street ice cream vendors.
Yes, there were different types of activities, but several of them were working as ice cream sellers in the town of Lima, no?
But in any case, just poor working people trying to survive. And
Yes, that's true. And not only people were killed, but also people were wounded. There is one case of this wounded who now is a handicapped man, quadriplegic, and he's still living in that conditions. But others also were wounded. They have no attention during several months by the administration of Fujimori. They were pressured, and one of them also, they were accused of being linked to subversion groups and passed several months in prison before they were finally released because their innocence was clear for them, that they were not involved at all in subversive or terrorist acts.
Now they were released after Fujimori was already out of power, correct?
Well, no, these ones were released in the next month after the massacre.
Okay. All right. And this Colina death squad was answerable to the military or to the intelligence services? Or
yes, it was a unit linked to the intelligence service of the armed forces, and through the chain of command, they report to the all the units of the intelligence service of the armed forces, and through several generals, they report to the chief in command of the armed forces in Peru of this administration of Fujimori, General Nicolás de Barrio Hermosa Ríos, and to Vladimiro Montesinos, who, and Salazar Monroe, who was the formal and the real, both of them, members of the intelligence service unit of the administration of Fujimori. So all this chain of command is being now accused, investigated of these crimes. There are separate trials in the case of the Cantuta. There are four trials. And in one of them, General Salomon Roy, a few months ago, has been, the verdict was that he must be punished with 35 years of prison. And two other members also, Colonel Pinto and Wilson Wilmer Jarleque, who has been living here in the state and was extradited to Lima, have been condemned already, and we are expecting that in the next weeks, no more than December, finally Alberto Fujimori receive a verdict from the court that is conducting the trial against him.
Okay, well, before we get to the case against Fujimori, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what were the actual circumstances under which he fell, because he had been in power for... almost 10 years?
10 years. Yeah. 10 years, yes. From 1990, the auto coup in 1992, and then his regime collapsed in after September 2000, after being reelected for a third period in an interpretation of the constitution that was unacceptable because he wanted to perpetrate in the administration of the Peruvian government. After in September, there were some videos of these of Montesinos who were introduced in the audience of the television channels by a congressman, and from there on, the administrations start to collapse. No, first was Montesinos, who was accused of these cases of corruption, but shortly Fujimori traveled to Brunei first, and then to Japan, where he established
Brunei. Really?
Brunei, yes, in the...
in the Indonesian archipelago.
Yes. There was a meeting of the APEC there. And then, he assisted the meeting, and from there he went to Japan, and he resigned to his administration responsibilities by fax. This was not accepted by the Congress.
From Japan?
Yes, from Japan.
Uh-huh.
This was not accepted by the Peruvian Congress. They dismissed him, and then it started the transitional democratic period with the election of former President Alberto Paniagua, who started an 8 months of administration with important transformations in the country after this corrupted criminal administration of Fujimori, Montesinos, and Hermosa Rios.
Okay, so these videotapes which emerged, which documented some cash deliveries, who made them, how were they released, and what exactly did they show? What did they reveal?
Well, they were produced by Montesinos himself. He, to every person he invited to his offices and talk with them and give the money, the dollars, in cash, no? All these was registered in videos by Montesinos himself.
Okay, to Peruvian legislators.
Yes, to Peruvian legislators.
In order to win their cooperation in what? What was
it? Well, in this first case of Curi, to be member of the Fujimorist members of the parliament, to vote in favor of the laws that the administration of Fujimori wanted to consolidate his power. So all these were taped in videos, no? But not only these congressmen cases, also members from the judiciary, members from electoral bodies, entrepreneurs were linked to media. So there were hundreds of cases of people in Peru from different structures of the state, and also private entrepreneurs were filmed by Montesinos after giving them a lot of money, no?
Okay, well, so Montesinos, the intelligence czar, was presumably recording all of this on film for his own personal record, so to speak. How were they released? How were they leaked?
Well, one congressman received from a member of the intelligence service a copy of one of these videos. And this was the starting point for the with the announcement made of this video, with the show made of this video, that started the collapse of the administration, no? First, Montesinos, who went out of the administration, he was given $15 million by Fujimori. He traveled to Panama initially. He pretend to ask asylum there. He was rejected by the administration of Panama, and then he came back to Peru. He was in a clandestine life during a few weeks, and then finally he traveled in a yacht from Lima, Callao, through Costa Rica, and finally to Venezuela, where he was staying there for several months under Chavez administration until he finally was captured and he was extradited to Peru for investigation by the prosecutors and accusations on crimes against humanity, corruption, trafficking arms to the FARC in Colombia, drug trafficking that are new cases that are being investigated in these days.
Okay, now this is, I'm trying to figure out what the politics of this extremely murky situation were. On one hand, you've got Fujimori and Montesinos were taking extremely brutal and draconian measures to put down the leftist guerrilla movements in Peru, predominantly the Shining Path, at the same time that they're accused of selling arms to the leftist rebels in Colombia, the FARC, and Montesinos was apparently given sanctuary by Hugo Chavez. So
yeah.
How do you read all of this?
Well, when the administration of Fujimori concentrate power, not only Fujimori but Montesinos himself and the armed forces through General Hermosa Rios, they were in capacity of controlling everything in the administration. There were no possibilities for the opposition, either the politicians, either civil society organizations. We start our social movements, particularly since 1998, with mobilizations in the streets of students, of social actors, unions protesting because of this concentration of power being produced by Montesinos and Fujimori. So in these circumstances is that with the control of all the power, they were allowed to commit all these crimes, no, of corruption, of linkage with drug trafficking. What was not understood in those days was that also the North American administration, I remember Barry McCaffrey, these anti-drugs of Tsar,
yes,
went to Lima several times. We met him, particularly human rights organizations. We informed him about who we consider was Montesinos, not only its linkage to corruption, but also its linkage to death squads like Colina Group. Nevertheless, they continued to collaborate with him for several years till finally the collapse of the administration. So it's a very contradictory position of the administration of North America in those days. By one side, having collaboration with Montesinos himself, it says that Montesinos was linked to the the CIA since the times where he was captain in times of Velasco Alvarado. That was its starting point of linkage with this.
I'm sorry, agency. In the times of who was that you just mentioned?
Velasco Alvarado was a former military who also, through a coup of state,
in the 1960s.
The Peruvian in the 70s, no?
70s.
Yeah. From 68 to 75.
Right.
No? So Montesinos has a long career of corruption. In times of Velasco, he was found guilty of selling information of Peru, and he was thrown from the armed forces.
Velasco was.
Yes.
Yes.
And for several years he was in this condition, till finally, in the end of the administration of Garcia, he recovered its linkage to the intelligence service in Peru, and in times of Fujimori, he was finally...
This is the first administration of Garcia, 10 years
yes,
ago.
Yes, the first administration of Garcia, he started his linkage once more within the intelligence services, no? And finally, in Fujimori, he was one of the strongest men of the administration of Fujimori.
Oh, really? Velasco became prominent in the Fujimori administration.
No. Montesinos.
Yes. Resurrected himself, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Increasingly, he started to have control on the armed forces, and then through the intelligence services to all rulers of the country in terms of the Congress, the judiciary, the prosecutor office.
Okay, so it was Montesinos. It was Montesinos who you said had was involved in a corruption scandal under the Velasco regime.
Yeah, that was its origins.
Yes,
and from there on, he was for several years not active.
Disgraced
in Peru.
Yes.
In disgrace. Yes. But he started being lawyer of drug traffickers from Colombia. It was his first activities, and then finally he reestablished linkage with the state during the final times of Garcia, and then with the strong possibilities of ruling the state with Fujimori.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I should say that it is around 1 minute of 1 o'clock in the morning here on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, and we are speaking tonight via telephone with Francisco Soberón of the Pro-Human Rights Association, the Asociación Pro Derechos Humanos of Peru, which is APRODE is the acronym, and I guess that's on the web at aprodh.org.pe, if I'm correct, right?
Yes, that's true. And there you can get information not only on the trial to Fujimori, but also information of human rights in Peru from in the last 25 years. We've been working, monitoring the situation in the context of political violence, and now also the human rights abuses that are committed in a democratic administration, but with big problems in terms of economic and social and cultural rights of Peruvians nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to bring the conversation up to the present day, but why don't you take this opportunity to tell us you're going to be speaking tomorrow and I believe the next day, right?
Yes, I've been invited by the Human Rights Clinic in Columbia University, and I will be having a presentation tomorrow at midday. And then on Thursday also I've been invited by the Human Rights Program of NYU to do another presentation on both of them on the trial on Fujimori that has been started in December 2007, and we hope that will end in a symbolic really importance in December of this year, 2008, and we hope with a verdict of condemned to Fujimori for its responsibility in human rights, because this actual process is related to the abuses of human rights. Because we must remember, your audience, that Fujimori already is convicted for one case of corruption.
Right, right. Do you have the actual information on where and when you're going to be speaking?
Yeah, in these both events, one is going to be in Colombia in the Clinic of Human Rights in 116th Street in Columbia University.
That's tomorrow at what time?
At 12 o'clock.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then
when are you going to be at NYU?
NYU on Thursday, also at 2 o'clock, in the University of NYU in the Program of Human Rights of the University.
Uh-huh. Is that at the NYU Law School?
Yes, NYU Law School.
That's on Bleecker, if I'm correct, right? Bleecker,
yes,
and 3rd?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Uh-huh. And you're going to be at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to be there?
No, at 12 o'clock in the, from 12 to 1.
Ah, okay, in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, yes.
On Thursday. So on Columbia University tomorrow, and then at NYU Law School the day
on
after
Thursday.
Tomorrow.
Yes,
but,
the day after
and
tomorrow.
Both at noon.
Yes, well, afternoon, of mm-hmm. course. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, so before we bring the conversation to the present day, I'm still, even after having followed the situation all these years, I'm still not quite clear exactly what particularly Montesinos' agenda was, and also Fujimori's. But I mean, it seems like Montesinos was the one who was sort of caught red-handed dealing arms to the FARC at the same time that they were fighting the leftist guerrillas in Peru very brutally.
Yeah.
And one hand, he was playing ball with the CIA and with Barry McCaffrey. And on the other hand, he was given protection by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. So what exactly was his agenda? What did Vladimir Montesinos represent?
Well, represents the activities of a criminal involved in different types of crimes, no? As we have seen in these 10 years of Fujimori administration, he was involved not only with the death squads that produced crimes against humanity through the death squad Colina, but also he was involved in general corruption to members of the administration of Fujimori and private entrepreneurs also, and he was also linked to drug trafficking in Peru, allowing that producers of cocaine and paste of coca was sent to Colombia by flights from the Peruvian clandestine airports in the jungle, in the upper Huallaga Valley, in the valley of Rio Apurimac in Ayacucho, so from different areas where these mafia groups work linkage in those days to the Colombians, who were the owners of the planes who take the paste of cocaine to Colombia, and there there was refined but to cocaine and then send it to the world. Well, Montesinos gave protection in the Upper Huallaga to all the producers. The helicopters of the armed forces were used to take the drug from some areas of the country to the airports where that was translated transferred there, then to airports in Colombia. And so in all these type of activities, he was expecting to be confronting the drug trafficking, but really what happened was is that he was involved. And in these days, a few days ago, this case of drug trafficking linkage to Pablo Escobar has been started in Lima.
Oh, yes?
Yes, yes, yes. Just a few days ago has started. He has several denounces, so there are several trials being going on in Peru against Montesinos, not only on crimes against humanity cases, human rights abuses, but also now drug trafficking. And he has been condemned already for the arms trafficking to the FARC.
Okay, so presumably the arms trafficking to the FARC was just sheer profiteering. There was no ideological or even strategic agenda behind it.
Well, I think it's more an economical issue.
Yes.
of corruption. He don't have moral concepts. He deals with anybody if it's if money is going to be an activity that allows him to get money.
All right.
Anybody.
So even though they were fighting the leftist rebels in Peru, they figured they can still sell arms to the ones in Colombia because it's for Colombians' problem.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. So a couple of years ago, Fujimori returned from Japan to Chile, where he mm-hmm. announced that he was going to run for the presidency of Peru once again from Chilean territory.
Yeah.
And instead, he was placed under house arrest in Chile at the behest of the Peruvian authorities and eventually extradited to Peru, where he stood trial.
Yes. But we must first mention, during the years between 2000 and 2005, when he traveled to Chile, there was also an extradition request to the Japanese authorities. But during those 4 years, this request was not responded by the authorities of Japan.
Why? With what justification?
Well, they give the Japanese, they recognize the Japanese nationality of Fujimori when he arrived to Japan. We must remember that his parents were Japanese. There is still doubts if he was also born originally in Japan, but at least he was recognized by the Japanese authorities his nationality, and the laws in Japan do not allow Japan to extradite its citizens to other third country. No?
He has dual citizenship then?
Yes. During his living in Tokyo, he was in with the support of the governor of Tokyo and several politicians in Tokyo. And it also says that the Yakuza was involved in the supporting of him in Tokyo. We traveled once with the relatives of the victims of La Cantuta to Japan. There were some social groups, amnesty groups in Tokyo, Peace Boat, other organizations were trying to pressure the government and the authorities, but no decision was made by the Japanese authorities till Fujimori decided to Chile in November 2005, pretending to impact the electoral process in Peru, saying that he will, from Chile, be in contact with Peruvians through media. But what he did not, I think he did not realize the mistake he was making by arriving to Chile. Perhaps he thought that he will receive the support of entrepreneurs, Chilean entrepreneurs, that invest in Peru during the administration of Fujimori. But also, there was the circumstance that in those days, the elections were in Chile. President Bachelet arrived to the country. And finally, the Peruvian authorities of the transitional administration of Toledo started a petition of extradition because there was a bilateral agreement between Chile and Peru for extradition process, and was detained initially in the school of the police in Chile, and then afterwards under comparisons he was arrested in his domicile. No, so he kept there for several months until finally the Supreme Court in Chile, after a initial verdict of not accepting the extradition by Magistrate Orlando Alvarez, finally by unanimous vote of the Supreme Court of Chile, the extradition was given to the judiciary system in Peru. And on 2007, finally Fujimori arrived, not as he announced coming for an electoral process, but as a criminal involved in crimes against humanity and in seven cases of corruption that are being handled by the Peruvian authorities nowadays.
All right, so he's behind bars at the moment as we speak.
Yes.
Yes.
He's in nearby the... inside the National Direction of Special Operations of the Police, in a barrack there, and also there is a compound. In this compound of the police, there is also a place where it was given to the judiciary to handle the trial of Fujimori since December the 10th of 2007, and we hope that in December this year we have a final verdict in this first stage.
Mm-hmm. A verdict, final verdict.
Yes, final verdict, yes. We are now in the last stage of the trial. We have had nearly 98 hearings with the witnesses, testimonies given orally, and now we are in the reviewing of all the material, documents, audio, videos that have been accepted by the court, to be discussed determine the responsibility of Fujimori in these crimes. No?
Okay, particularly the two massacres which we discussed earlier at La Cantuta University.
Yes, the massacre Cantuta and
Barrios Altos.
And also the kidnap of an entrepreneur, Samuel Dyer, and a journalist, Gustavo Goriti, who were kidnapped by the intelligence services and kept in prison for several weeks in one case till the several days in case of Gustavo Goriti, a well-known journalist, captured by the intelligence services in the days of the coup in April 92.
Did he survive?
Yes, they survived, and they have given their testimony in the trial. So are these cases of kidnapping and also the cases of Cantuta and Barrios Altos, of disappearances and extrajudicial executions and torture produced by the death squad Colina.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and he's already been convicted of one charge, right?
Yes,
but it didn't,
corruption
but
charge.
That, ironically, concerned an illegal search of the home of the wife of Vladimiro Montesinos.
Yes, in his wife's house. So, and this is this verdict has been confirmed by the Supreme Court. So,
all right, so why did they choose to go with the most trivial charge first, as
well,
opposed
because
to...
Well, it was the more advanced in terms of procedural in the judiciary system of Peru. So that is why they started with this case. And then they decided to start the human rights cases. And after this December is ended, these cases, there are still... three more cases that have been accumulated in two processes of corruption during his administration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and there were, all told, in the conflict in Peru, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission found there were something like 50,000 victims. Now, not all of that was...
70,000.
70,000, yeah.
In prospective, yes, of all victims, extrajudicial executions, crimes committed by the Shining Path, disappear persons, mass graves all over the country. So all were supposedly nearly 70,000 victims.
Okay, and Fujimori was in power for what? Approximately half of that time, right?
Well, 10 years of the 20 years of political violence.
Okay, yes. So presumably these crimes which he's being charged with are just the proverbial tip of the iceberg.
Well, yes, there are cases from all periods of violence. We know that it's impossible to bring to trial all cases of human rights abuses in those days. They were now being condemned, all high-ranked members of the Shining Path, Guzman, Polay, and everyone is in prison to life sentence, some of them to 35 years or 25 years or 20 years, other members of the Shining Path and MRTA. And now it's we have started the access to justice to victims of human rights abuses by the security forces, the armed forces, and the police. We have till this point four verdicts being given and confirmed by the Supreme Court in four cases of human rights abuses, one in from Ayacucho in the province of Cangallo, the disappearances of authorities in a small town, Chuschi, in rural area. Also, the case of the journalist Hugo Bustillos from the magazine Carretas, who was extrajudicially executed by militaries in the province of Huanti, Ayacucho.
Okay, this took place when?
Those crimes were in different times of the 20 years of violence. For example, Chuschi was under Fujimori administration. Mm-hmm. The case of Hugo Bustillos was in times of Belaunde administration.
Okay, and who is being charged in these cases?
Well, there were militaries and of the armed forces of Peru who...
Officers.
Officers of different ranks in the armed forces.
And these cases are still pending?
Yes, there are a lot of cases.
Right, they're still pending. There has not been a verdict in these cases yet.
No. In all these, I have made references. The case of the journalist, the case of the authorities of Chuschi, and the case of a student of the Catholic University in Lima, Castillo. In all these three and another case in Huánuco, the verdict has been confirmed by the Supreme Courts. Are the first four cases confirmed by the Supreme Court.
Okay, so people have been convicted and are going to prison?
They are in prison.
They are in prison. Different, okay.
14 years, 17 years.
Military 15. Officers.
Excuse me?
Military officers.
Military officers, yes.
Going to prison.
Police officers also.
Okay. All right, so when do we expect how soon do we expect a verdict in the crimes which Fujimori is now facing charges on?
Well, these cases of Cantuta and Barros Altos and the kidnapping would end in its first verdict in December, probably. And then there is opportunity of appeal for any part of the participants in this process. And then a new chamber of five members should be named by the Supreme Court to deal with this appeal that probably could take 6 months or something like that. In this second appeal period, there is no hearings at all, just a revision of the file of the verdict, and then a decision of confirm of the sentence or change the sentence. Finally, should be decided by this appeal court after the verdict given by the actual tribunal handling the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what is the role of your organization? What is the role of the...
We represent the victims of La Cantuta, and we co-participate with other human rights organizations in the representation of the Barrios Altos victims and the kidnappings of Gustavo Gorriti. So
you're actually providing the legal representation for the...
Legal representation for these relatives of the victims. There is also the intervention of the prosecutor, and also Fujimori himself, it has his attorney. I think that what we have seen in this 9 months of trial, not only we, not only the defense of Fujimori, but also international observers that have visited Peru in these last months, from Amnesty International, from Human Rights Watch, from the International Center for Transitional Justice, from the International Federation of Human Rights based in France, the International Commission of Jurists, and several human rights organizations all over the world have stated that this is an example of a trial with publicity, with transparency, with all opportunities given by the court to all intervenients in the process to ask the questions they requested, to present witnesses they wanted. So I think this is a very good example of the high level of standard of justice that could be achieved in a country like Peru. We hope that this is an example not only for Peru, but also for Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have just a few minutes left, and maybe you could say a bit about the current situation in Peru vis-a-vis human rights.
Yes. Well, it's of course that we are not in periods of political violence where Shining Path was active and the controversial operations produced massive human rights violations. But nevertheless, during this new administration of President Garcia, there have been a recent case of disappearances in the Ayacucho region, in the Rio Purimac Valley, where there were operations by the armed forces and the police in trying to capture the remnants of the Shining Path and drug traffickers. But it seems that in these circumstances, peasant community producers of the area were disappeared, and now four bodies were found 3 days ago, and they are identified by their widows and families as being peasants of the area. So is now under investigation of the prosecutor office, and we are participating, representing the victims in this new case that we hope is not the initial period of new human rights abuses. That
this took place where, exactly?
In an area called Biscatan in the province of Huanta in Ayacucho region.
Which was where the Shining Path first emerged back in
the 80s. And there is still some small columns of Shining Path in this area and the Upper Huallaga. And I think it's the responsibility of the state to struggle against these remnants, to disappear them with the use of legal force, not practicing human rights violations. And I think this should be achieved. But what we always are going to monitor, that civil population is not affected by these controversial operations of the police or the armed forces in these areas.
Well, you see, this is the perennial dilemma, is that particularly, I find, in the case of Peru, it was very difficult to find voices who took a neither-nor position in terms of the human rights abuses which were committed either by the state or by the Shining Path. And that if you talked about the abuses committed by the state, its apologists would say, well, we don't have any alternative because we have to crush this brutal insurgency. And if you talk about the abuses committed by the Shining Path, you would get the opposite song and dance from their supporters.
Well,
so there were very few people.
One of the characteristics of Peruvian human rights movement in its 25 years, and I must tell you that in 2 years after we start our own work, we established in Peru the National Coordination for Human Rights that was an umbrella organization for all our activities in Peru. And from the beginning, we have a clear position of condemning the crimes and the abuses committed by the Shining Path and also the violations of human rights produced by security forces. This is a clear position we have had always in these 25 years of activities in human rights. But in several circumstances, when crimes against humanity are internationally recognized by the United Nations or the Inter-American System of Human Rights, I mean the practice of disappearances, the practice of torture, or the practice of extrajudicial executions, these are not accepted in any country, in any circumstances. So in those occasions, we assume the representation of victims in these cases, but just in these cases. We have never represented the Shining Path in their legal defense when they tried to confront the trials in Lima to defend themselves from these activities that they political, but we think they were not political. There were crimes committed by them. The Pol Pot, like the Pol Pot experience in Cambodia by the Khmer Rouge, we must remember that Shining Path was a Maoist group with this practice in the country. But at the same time that monitor the Shining Path, we have to monitor the human rights abuses committed by the armed forces. And I think in the experience of Latin America, that this has happened in the South Cone, in Argentina, Chile, during military administrations, or in Central America, in Guatemala, or El Salvador, and now in Colombia also happening, I think that it's important that human rights organizations, not only the nationals, but the international ones, follow up these situations of political violence and denounce all crimes when they are committed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. This has been extremely informative. Francisco Soberón of the Asociación Pro Derechos Humanos, APRODE, which is online at APRODE, APRODEH, .org.pe for Peru. And you're going to be speaking tomorrow at midday at the Human Rights Clinic at Columbia University, and then Thursday at midday at the NYU Law School. So anybody who wants to hear more can join you there, correct?
Yes, thank you very much okay. for your invitation. I'm also then traveling to D.C., to Washington, D.C., the 15th of October. I am receiving, together with APRODE, a recognition, the Letelier Moffitt Award by the International Policy Studies Institution. And then I'm going to participate in hearings in the session of period in the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights in Washington, D.C., on a case of sexual violation committed by the security forces in Peru in days of political violence. So I have an agenda very complete in these next days and weeks here in the States.
Well, it certainly sounds it. Well, Francisco Soberón, thank you very much, and the best of luck to you, and we'll continue to monitor the situation, hopefully get you back on these airwaves again sometime soon.
Thank you very much for all, and to your audience here in New York, particularly my friends and colleagues from Latin America living in this wonderful city of New York.
Okay. Buenas noches, Francisco.
Buenas noches. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we've just got 2 minutes left if weaponry is going to show up, which leaves me just enough time to briefly run through my announcements. The next two Tuesdays, there are going to be events which are related to the impending economic collapse. And the first one is going to be, next Tuesday, October 14th. Finding a better foundation for society than competition for wealth. This is going to be the theme of the discussion at the Anarchist Forum. And it's going to be an open discussion, so join us with the Libertarian Book Club at the Anarchist Forum to discuss finding a better foundation for society than competition for wealth. And talking about the money economy and the disaster zone which economics has become, and how we as communities can seek out alternatives for survival and sustenance in the midst of what looks like is going to be a very challenging time. So that's going to be, once again, this coming Tuesday, a week from tonight, October 14th, 7:30 p.m. at 21 Clinton Street, which is just south of Houston on the Lower East Side. 1 week from tonight, October 14th, 7:30 p.m., 21 Clinton Street, just south of Houston on the Lower East Side. And then I believe it's going to be the Tuesday after that. There's going to be a talk at the new space, the new school for pluralistic anti-capitalist education, featuring Andrew Kleiman, who is going to be giving a presentation entitled Worse Than They Want You to Think, a Marxist analysis of the economic crisis. There's an optimistic title. And Andrew writes, in their haste to promote redistributive policies and demonize the greed and corruption of Wall Street, and in their desire to avoid advocating a liberatory alternative to capitalism, liberals and leftists have sought to downplay the severity of the current economic crisis. In contrast,
please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.